You don't have to have a TV crew with you in order to experience some great travel adventures of your own. Let's check in with some of our listeners at 877-333-7425 right now to hear where your travels have been taking you and what they've taught you about our world. Eric, who's from Murphy, North Carolina, is in China now, and he emailed us in the middle of a long-term, low-budget trip across Asia and Europe. Eric, thanks for joining us. Now, first off, where in China are you, and how long have you been so far away from home?
Right now, I'm in Shenwei, China, in the south, hitchhiking around. I've been traveling the last few years as an international NGO worker. When I was working in Cambodia, I opened my house up to couch surfers, and about 250 of them stayed with me. They told me about their travels around the world, and they got me excited about it. So when I finished my contract, I started hitchhiking and traveling around too. I went from village to village, city to city, through 21 countries, literally all the way around the world. And in total, I guess my budget was about $2,000 for the year.
$2,000 for the whole year?
Well, maybe a few hundred dollars more than that. But yeah, $2,000. About half of that goes towards the plane tickets, and the rest of it pretty much covers food. Housing was free everywhere I went because I stayed completely with the locals. I hitchhiked, so transportation was completely free. And food, as you might imagine, is very cheap in most countries.
I am so jealous. Not that I could even do this, but that people still do this. You're just on the road indefinitely, spending a couple thousand dollars a year. And let's talk just a minute, Eric, about your transportation and your accommodations. First of all, you're hitchhiking. You actually, when you want to go somewhere, you do the old-fashioned go out to the road out of town and stick out your thumb. How does that work?
Well, it works really well. I mean, when I lived in Cambodia, I hosted all these couch surfers, and they told me that I could do it. And, you know, I was skeptical. I thought it would be difficult. And then when I went to Thailand, I started doing it, and I started going from city to city. And then I did it across India, and then I did it through the Caucasus, through Turkey, through Europe, through the United States. And it's really easy. All you have to do is go to a place where people can see you.
Right.
The best place, of course, is a gas station where you can actually talk to them.
Right.
Hold your thumb out, and people will pick you up.
Yeah.
In most countries, I never wait very long at all.
So this is like a subculture, people who go couch surfing, and they share information and inspire and embolden each other to go out there and vagabond around the world.
Yeah, there's actually quite a lot of us. You'd be surprised, but once you start traveling, you just start meeting them, and there's quite a lot of them. They're all amazing people.
So my readers spend in 2 weeks for hotels alone what you spend in an entire year traveling all around the world. Now, you said when you're hitchhiking, it's rare that somebody doesn't invite you home for the night. Tell us about scoring free places to sleep.
So, of course, when I'm hitchhiking, which is all the time, people will normally invite me home. I would say about 90% of the time they'll invite me home without me saying anything. Of course, if it's evening and they haven't said anything, sometimes I might mention, you know, I'm looking for a place to sleep. And I would say about the other 5% of the time I'll be invited. So that's 95% right there. Then there's the last 5%. The last 5% is where I really don't have a place to stay. And when this happens, what I do is I go to the village. I just go to someone's door. I knock on it and I say, hello. I'm a traveler here. Can I stay with you? And in country after country, everyone says yes. I've done this in no less than a dozen countries, and I've had no problems ever. I always get accepted.
That is incredible. I can see this happening in the developing world. Do you do it also in the first world?
I've done it in a few countries in Europe and even a bit in the United States. It's not literally always knocking on the door. Sometimes it is.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk about one of my friends. I told him about this idea, and now he's backpacking through America, and he's been doing it in America. He tells me it works really well. People let him stay in their garages all the time, for example.
Now, you said in Western Europe you hook up with squatters. Tell us about that.
When I was hosting people in Cambodia, I met a lot of interesting people, and some of them were squatters. So they introduced me to the squatting community in Western Europe. In Western Europe, I guess I stayed in cities more than villages, so I needed a new way to do everything. So what I did instead is I went to the different squatting communities around a few different cities in France and Netherlands and Germany, and I made a lot of great people there.
Now, what do you say about people who just think, that is dangerous? No way on earth would I ever do that. I'll get knifed in the darkness.
You know, I thought these things at one point, but you know, it's not true. You know, the world is so amazingly full of stuff. Everywhere I go, people come and they help me. They show me around. They want to be my friends. They want to be my family. The people I've met in these villages, they're not just strangers anymore.
Right.
You know, I contact them. I love them. You know, these people, sometimes I would stay with them for a week because I would have such a great time with them, learning their culture, and just part of their family.
We're talking with Eric from Murphy, North Carolina, who really is Eric from the world, and he is vagabonding endlessly around the world on about $2,000 a year. Eric, I'm sold on all of this so far, but you also mentioned that you learned to dumpster dive. And as a budget traveler, it has occurred to me there's a lot of good food just sitting there, and those people who put it there don't have diseases, and I could just eat it. And you do that.
Yes. So when I was staying with the squatters in Europe, they would take me around the different dumpsters, and they would show me that in Europe, the food's actually really clean in the dumpsters. I was really surprised. Like, the vegetables would be completely separate from all the other food, and sometimes they'll be completely wrapped in saran wrap. It looks clean. It is clean. In other cases, we would just go up to local vendors at the end of the evening and say, hey, so you have, you know, 10 pounds of bread, because it's the bakery, and we would simply say, can we have it? And, of course, they would always say yes.
Are you writing up this in your Facebook page?
I have a blog, yourworldyourhome.com, and I do try to keep some of my stories on it.
Yourworldyourhome.com. That's pretty easy. And Eric, how long do you think you're going to be on the road now before you go back to exotic North Carolina?
I'm pretty sure I'll be on the road indefinitely. I go in between traveling and working.
Okay. And when you go back to North Carolina, you're going to have a tough time settling back down.
Well, so last year, during my trip around the world, I did make it to the U.S., and I did visit my home, and it was difficult. It was like a completely different culture. My accent had changed. My ideas had changed, my beliefs, my philosophy, the food I love. It was difficult going back to the old foods. Instead, I started making all the foods from around the world, introducing my family, you know, endless exotic cuisines.
I just think it's so inspirational. So, Eric, check in with us again later, if you don't mind, and we'll stay tuned to your blog, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, take care. Happy travels. We're checking in with you, our listeners, for inspiring tales of memorable travels at 877-333-RICK. You can also post a travel report or comment on a show you've heard in our listener feedback forum. That's in the radio section at ricksteves.com. And Sally's on the line in Lavelle, Pennsylvania. Sally, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Rick. 3 years ago, I solo trekked to Volterra, Italy. And to my delight, a cycle race was expected while I was there. So being an avid photographer, I well poised myself to photograph from a ledge of a church just above where I saw a refreshment station, so I thought for sure they'd be coming by. The cyclists arrived en masse, and I noticed that they couldn't keep up with refilling the cups, and the man in charge saw me standing there and desperately motioned for me to hop off my ledge, put down my camera, and dive in.
Now, we should let our listeners know you're in Volterra here, which is one of my very favorite hill towns in Italy. Volterra is kind of between Siena and Florence, near San Gimignano, and it is a great town. And you went there on a bicycle yourself?
No, I took a bus and stayed in that wonderful monastery you recommended.
Oh, yeah.
And while I was standing overlooking the Tuscan countryside, as you know, from that beautiful wall overlook, I chatted with a few cyclists who mentioned this race coming through. So as I filled all the drinking cups and was actually handing them to passing cyclists, I was caught up in this fray of several hundred cute Italian cycle guys.
Wonderful.
And one even stopped to have a photograph with me. Huh. And at the end, the guy in charge invited me to enjoy the remnant of all these wonderful Sicilian blood oranges, which I adore. And I just had such a sense of how diving into and being part of the culture is so much more enjoyable than being a mere spectator photographing.
Well, if you're willing to jump in when you get a little opening in the door like that, that's part of good travel, isn't it?
Yeah, it was certainly a delight.
Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome, Rick.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Carolyn from Opelika, Alabama, heard the interview with our Swedish tour guide, Åsa Danielsson, about Stockholm, and she shares this memory that taught her something about herself. In Alabama, close friends greet each other with the word, hey. When we visited Europe, we found that in Sweden, when we met complete strangers, such as salespeople greeting us when we entered their store, they'd use a word that sounded exactly like our familiar greeting, hey. I hadn't even realized that we Alabamans had such a distinct and familiar form of greeting each other until I heard these friendly Swedes greeting us with the same word, and it sounded like they were our good friends from back home. Hey.
Hey!
Where have your travels taken you lately? Tell us about your own trip of a lifetime or the surprises you found on an overseas adventure. Our number at Travel with Rick Steves is 877-333-7425, and you can reach us by email at radio@ricksteves.com. Joe's on the line in Santa Rosa, California. Joe, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. It's great to speak with you. We were in Munich in 1972 to the Olympics, and we ran a microbus and drove through many countries. Then we finally went over to Prague, which was my homeland, and being a young individual, we had not been that knowledgeable about what was happening in that country during the time in which they were being taken care of by the Russians.
So this was a time when Prague was in a bleak communist sort of situation, where there was a lot of people who were living reminders of World War II, and where many people remembered the horrors brought upon them by the Nazis.
Right. So we were trying to find where my great uncle lived, and were asking the people who were walking home if they could help us find this place, and we were speaking in German, and they just wouldn't even respond to us. And finally we met an older gentleman who was also walking home, and we asked him, and he said, "Oh, don't you understand that this is not the language to speak in this country?"
Wow.
And we showed him where we were wanting to go. He got in the microbus and said, "Here, let me take you there." And it was just a wonderful thing to be able to have this person take us there to finally make contact with our relatives.
And learn at the same time of the difficult heritage they had
and
not wanting to speak German. I think we need to remember that there is a whole generation that was forced to speak German in the Czech Republic. And then after that, there was a whole generation that was forced to speak Russian. And, much later, if you went back to the Czech Republic and you talked to people in Russian, they may understand you, but they wouldn't want to. They'd rather struggle with English, I think, because they didn't have that difficult colonial time with English language. All right. Joe from Santa Rosa, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much. Bye now.
Bye now.
Denise is calling in from Weatherford, Oklahoma. Denise, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Rick, for having me. Well, my husband and I went on a 30th anniversary trip this past year. We went to both Israel and to Jordan. Both of those places don't have a lot of public transportation, so we had to learn to get around on our own, and we rented a car for most of the time we were in Israel. But we had a great time and did it all on our own and got to meet a lot of people and see so many things that we couldn't have seen if we would have gone on a tour, even though that's what everyone told us, you know, it wouldn't be safe. You've got to go on a tour. We had just a fantastic time on our own. You know, we didn't have any trouble at all. As an American, you know, we can flash our passport and we can go into Palestinian territory, or we can go into Israeli places, and, you know, we have the best of both worlds because we could go both places.
You know, I found that when I was going from Jordan to Israel, it felt like a refugee camp at the border, but I pulled out my American passport, and it was the oddest thing. It was like the Red Sea parted, and I could walk right through it. I just felt...
Right, it's like your magic ticket.
I forgot how powerful that was, and it doesn't seem fair, but we're lucky we've got that passport and we come from a country that everybody wants to take care of, I guess.
That's right. We had some things that we wanted to do and see. We couldn't find a tour that allowed us to do all that. And, you know, we got to kayak on the River Jordan, and we got to snorkel in the Red Sea. And, you know, when we went to Jordan, we were the first people in Petra that day. We had the whole place to ourselves.
What's that like? That's probably the major site I want to see in the Middle East, and even all of the whole Mediterranean area, is Petra.
Well, we got there about 6 a.m.
And you want to get there early because the light is rich and the colors are popping, right?
And you get the whole place to yourself. It's just magical.
Is it cave dwellings? Is it medieval? Tell us a little bit what Petra is.
Petra is, there's facades that are actually chiseled into the walls of the mountain sides. Such delicate chiseling, and everything is symmetrical. I mean, how it was done 2,000 years ago, we just can't even imagine how they did this. And they're so big, too.
Mm-hmm.
When you stand in front of them, you're just tiny.
So did you feel comfortable? I mean, you look at the news and you think, you know, you should be wearing a flak vest.
At one time, we were about a mile from the Lebanon border. At another time, we were, you know, about a mile from Syria. We were driving. At one point, we saw some tanks in a wooded area that had camouflage netting over them, and we thought, I wonder if we should be here.
Maybe we should be careful about proceeding, yeah.
Yeah.
But generally, did you find people were uptight, or were they welcoming and casual?
They were casual. We enjoyed our time more like in around the Sea of Galilee area.
Uh-huh.
That would seem to be a friendlier area. Jerusalem is so touristy. There's so many people trying to make a buck off tourists.
That's the feeling I had, was everybody was trying to sell you stuff in Jerusalem.
It wasn't quite as friendly and as welcoming. So we really loved the Galilean area.
Now, you rode an Arab bus into Bethlehem. What was that like?
You just buy a ticket, get on the bus. You're going to, we were the only non-Arabs that were on that bus.
But what does that feel like? Did you feel comfortable, or was everybody staring at you?
We definitely felt like we were in the minority, and there's a language barrier there. There's not too many English speakers.
I've heard people can actually spend the night in a Bedouin tent and this sort of thing.
We did, and that was actually in Jordan. That was a highlight for us. And I must say, Jordanians don't speak a lot of English, but if a Jordanian knows one English word, it's the word welcome. And every time they find out you're an English speaker, they're, welcome over and over again.
Welcome. What was it like? Why was that a highlight? I mean, it's basically, you feel like you're sleeping in the desert in a tent?
Oh, you are in the middle of the desert. You're in the middle of Wadi Rum Desert. And they took us in a pickup with kind of a little sheet over the back for shade and took us over the desert to the campground, which was like an hour or two drive into the desert. We were kind of at the end of the travel season, so we're the only people staying at the camp that night. They could have maybe 15 or 20 at the peak of season, but we were the only two. They fixed this wonderful meal that they actually make in layers underground with charcoal underground that's cooking it. They bring it out of the ground. It's something called zarb. And then we feasted, just the two of us, feasted on this wonderful meal. And then we had this wonderful conversation with the owner of this camp. We talked politics and religion and world relations and had a wonderful time. And then we had a tent that we stayed in. And just a wonderful, you could see the stars like you've never seen it kind of night.
And basically you trusted people, you were on your own, you were exposed. Sounds like it worked out great.
Yeah, we had great fun, and I'd highly recommend it.
Thanks, Denisa, for this report. It's got me thinking about Israel and Jordan.
Thank you.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. Thanks to our colleagues at the BBC in London for their help this week. You can add your comments or travel reports to our online feedback forum. It's part of the extras you'll find each week in the radio section of our website, ricksteves.com. We can also email you with the topics and dates of our next recording sessions and for our next open phones. That's where you can check in with Rick about your own travels. Simply include your email address in the link on the radio page of ricksteves.com. And join us again next week for more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. Tips about traveling in Europe and information about the EU are available at euintheus.org.